Welcome to the Confluence of Ideas from Confluence Investment Management, focusing on major economic and geopolitical trends and their investment implications. I'm Phil Adler. Confluence Investment Management's 2026 Market and Economic Outlook anticipates a reacceleration of the economy next year and a low risk of recession. In its report, Confluence discusses the reasons behind these predictions and ways investors can prepare. The authors of this report are Confluence Advisory Director Bill O'Grady, Chief Market Strategist Patrick Fearon Hernandez, and Associate Market Strategist Thomas Wash. We are recording this in mid-December 2025. Gentlemen, you've titled your report, Implications of the New Techno-Industrial State. Are you saying that the United States is moving away from a reliance on free enterprise to drive the economy?
Well, thanks for having us on the program, Phil. This is Patrick, but I'd like to have Bill answer this first question of yours, since he primarily wrote that part of the article. I think we all see eye to eye on this issue, but Bill does an especially good job of explaining it.
Well, Phil, we're not moving away from free enterprise completely, but we are going to do it in a fashion much more than what we have seen over the past four decades. Beginning in the late 1970s, there was a definitive shift from government intervention into the economy to a greater reliance on markets. During the 1980s, this policy change was in response to a serious inflation problem. In the wake of the fall of communism, the U.S. further extended its reliance on markets, expanding this market doctrine globally. Essentially, once the national security goal was no longer considered critical, market reliance became dominant. What has now changed is that the U.S. is facing great power competition. In other words, investment decisions are no longer just based on market factors, but on national security concerns too. That means that governments have and will increasingly direct investment and regulatory decisions into managing the economy.
So, Bill, how might this new approach or way of defining things change what economists and forecasters prioritize in their research to help investors navigate the future?
It'll be a huge shift. There are very few analysts who have any market experience from the 1970s or before. In fact, there aren't many contemporaries that were even alive in that period. In general, increasing government intervention into the economy will tend to extend trends beyond what might be justified by mere market forces. For example, if a technology is considered critical for national defense, it might get direct fiscal support, favorable lending terms, regulatory relief, or other supportive actions that might boost equity prices in certain sectors or industries. At the same time, other areas of the market might be disfavored by government and face additional headwinds. Analysts will need to incorporate these factors into their analysis in determining market allocations.
Gentlemen, you seem confident in your report that consumer spending will keep sustaining economic growth. I can think of some reasons why this might not happen, including job losses due to AI, continued paltry wage gains for lower-income Americans, also an increase in credit delinquencies, and rising prices of imports. Thomas, I'll direct this question to you. How can consumer spending remain, in the face of these challenges, strong enough to overcome these problems?
Well, Phil, you've pinpointed the exact tensions in the current economy. If we looked only at the risks, the potential job losses, stagnant wages, rising delinquencies, and affordability, a slowdown would seem inevitable. Yet the data continue to surprise to the upside, largely due to a resilient consumer base. Let me explain. So first, spending is being powered by high-income households whose wealth is closely tied to the strong equity market. This group has consistently spent on services like travel and high-end goods, providing a substantial floor for overall consumption. Secondly, we anticipate offsetting supports. You know, the forthcoming tax cuts should provide direct relief to lower and middle-income households, helping to buffer against the pressures you've named. Therefore, while these headwinds may moderate growth, we expect the combined strength of upper-income spending and fiscal policy to sustain it.
You also seem confident that corporate investment in AI will remain strong. What happens if this investment doesn't result in actual profits?
You know, that's actually the big risk everyone is talking about. But we remain confident because the government has given companies a financial cushion against those initial losses. Think of the incentives like the 100% write-off for equipment, as well as the R&D cost deductions as a huge discount. They dramatically lower the cost of building new AI infrastructure. This means companies can keep their cash flows healthy and continue investing in necessary AI capacity, even if profits don't show up in the first few years. Building that capacity now is the essential step before they can harvest the huge profits expected from widespread AI use down the road.
Let's look at your outlook for asset classes, and I'll direct this question to Bill. First, what is your view of the traditional 60-40 asset mix between stocks and bonds for the large tent of average long-term investors? Does it still make sense?
If we are right on government influence on the economy, it raises the risk of higher inflation. Generally speaking, the fixed income portion of a 60-40 portfolio tends to be less effective when inflation runs higher than 4%. What we suspect is that the fixed income portion will need to be diversified and reduced, perhaps by adding commodities or alternatives to provide protection for weaker equity prices.
You say the new techno-industrial state will apply a lot of pressure on the Federal Reserve to aggressively lower interest rates. What is your outlook for the U.S. bond market in this scenario?
Fed independence is much more difficult to justify when national security issues increase in importance. After all, if protecting the nation becomes a whole-of-government approach, then having a central bank out of step with that goal becomes a problem. Bond markets usually don't like that outcome, as it suggests inflation will be allowed to be higher than an independent central bank would tolerate. But history also shows that central banks, along with regulators, can stifle long-term interest rates. This process, otherwise known as financial repression, is often deployed under these circumstances. Under financial repression, the nominal return on bonds is generally okay, but the real return compared to inflation is usually lackluster.
Foreign government bonds, especially in emerging markets, have been looking attractive lately as the dollar depreciates. I'll direct this question to Patrick. Are there good opportunities here for more conservative investors?
Well, Phil, the depreciating dollar, lower U.S. interest rates, and stabilizing international trade policies probably will help those emerging markets with dollar-denominated debt. But keep in mind that many emerging markets rely heavily on producing and exporting commodities, and many commodities are likely to remain challenged by excess supply in 2026. That could still leave many emerging markets struggling to pay their debts.
Turning to U.S. stocks, what's your outlook for the S&P 500 in 2026?
Well, we've adopted a pretty conservative, cautious view on large-cap U.S. stocks for the coming year. But we note that there are definite risks to the upside. Our estimate uses two quantitative models. The first suggests that the S&P 500's operating earnings will come in at only 6.3% of gross domestic product in 2026 versus 8.1% of GDP in the third quarter of 2025. That's consistent with a number of recent economic trends, such as the new U.S. import tariffs, etc. On the other hand, our second quantitative model, which we use to estimate the price-to-earnings ratio, is suggesting higher valuations. We're assuming a P/E ratio of 28.5 on the S&P 500's operating earnings in 2026, up from about 25.5 currently. If you put it all together, this leads to a point estimate of 67.10 for the S&P 500 price index at the end of 2026. We suspect the likely range would be between 6,400 to 7,000. However, our model does suggest that the fair value PE could be as high as 31.1. That would have yielded a point estimate of about 73.20 for the S&P 500. That's why we're stressing that there's probably more risk to the upside than to the downside versus our target of 67.10.
Well, broadly speaking, at least so far, higher price-to-earnings ratios have not turned away investment in AI stocks. Are you comfortable with these higher ratios?
Well, especially because of the way that so much new money into the stock market is allocated per indexing, we think net inflows will continue to flow disproportionately to large cap growth stocks, and technology in particular. Therefore, AI-related stocks will probably still find a lot of buying interest. All the same, valuations are already pretty high, and it wouldn't take a lot of disappointing news from the AI sector to push valuations a bit lower. At the same time, if corporate investment broadens out a bit as we expect in 2026, you would likely see somewhat higher valuations for large cap value stocks. This is all just a way of saying that the flat market that we expect in 2026 may involve a bit of rotation in favor of value stocks, although we don't see a wholesale repudiation of growth equities.
So you believe index investing will remain a powerful support system for large cap and growth stocks?
Yes, we think so. We're not just expecting indexing to remain a key factor in 2026. As far as we can see, indexing is likely to remain a key factor for the stock market in many years to come. And one consequence of that is that larger cap stocks will likely have a lot of momentum.
My next question is the Confluence Committee becoming more interested in out-of-favor sectors like consumer staples? And I'll direct that question to Bill.
Although out-of-favor areas could stay out of favor, they do play an important role in diversifying a portfolio. One way of thinking about this is that holding out-of-favor sectors allows you to take greater risk in what is currently in favor.
Patrick, we talked earlier about foreign government bonds. Do you continue to favor foreign stocks?
We remain pretty bullish on foreign stocks, especially in the developed countries. But some emerging markets are also likely to do well. We continue to think that the depreciating dollar will help foreign stocks outperform, while more stimulative economic policies in key regions, especially Europe, will likely provide an added boost. And of course, valuations are generally a lot more attractive in foreign stock markets than in the U.S. market.
How about emerging markets? Are you closer to raising their visibility in the Confluence asset allocation portfolios?
Well, as we noted previously, the falling dollar and more stable trade policies are likely to help out a lot of emerging market stocks as well. As we expect to discuss more in our upcoming geopolitical outlook for 2026, there is some chance of a kind of grand bargain between the U.S. and China that would reduce geopolitical tensions. That would likely be bullish for U.S. and Chinese stocks as well. And of course, China is an emerging market.
Bill O'Grady, you've written about commodities for a long time. Let's look at gold right now. Gold has been gangbusters, along with silver. Is their run reaching resistance levels?
Well, gold has had a great year. We expect it to continue to do okay, but we do expect other commodities, especially industrial metals and energy, to show stronger performance next year.
What are the most compelling opportunities in commodities right now?
Oil is really cheap, in part because the Trump administration is purposely creating conditions to hold down energy prices. Despite these pressures, though, oil has been holding its own. I wouldn't be surprised to see oil prices perform better next year, but I would caution that if we do get a peace deal in Ukraine, the initial reaction will probably be for weaker oil prices.
Let's come back now to your initial theme, implications of the new techno-industrial state. Does this new reality favor large corporations over small businesses to the extent that the margin between large and small will keep expanding?
In the 1950s, but especially in the 1960s, small caps actually outperformed because they were allowed to make decisions solely on market forces. Large firms were more heavily regulated to meet the broader goals of society. I don't expect this situation to be the case this time around. Larger firms in favored sectors are going to see tailwinds that small firms won't receive. But there will also be large caps that don't benefit for national security reasons.
Under this scenario, what are key risks for investors? In other words, what concerns you most about what could go wrong?
Well, to quote a famous British prime minister, events, dear boy, events. Most analysts get the broad outlines correct, but black swans such as coups, unexpected deaths, weather events can trigger market events that have outsized effects. Not long ago, for example, COVID wasn't on the radar of most analysts.
I'll end our discussion with a question I often ask in these types of outlooks. Can you identify, as we move into the next year, key economic reports and likely policy developments you are watching especially closely for signs of deviation from your outlook?
Well, I'll start out on that one. Among the key things I'd be watchful for is any change in market sentiment toward large technology companies and or a possible wave of smaller cap tech firms that might find a way to ride the AI boom. Even though the AI boom right now is focused heavily on large caps, we can't discount the possibility that smaller, younger firms will eventually find a way to start grabbing the limelight. Other key things I'm looking for is any chance of renewed policy uncertainty, whether it's surrounding trade, regulation, or other topics. A final thing to keep an eye on is the risk of a credit crisis or larger scale defaults, which could undermine sentiment.
I am watching to see if we don't get some cooling off in the AI-driven parts of the market. I think the technology will be game-changing, but it has lifted certain equity prices and some recalibration is possible. Ray Worsick, who the former chief economist at A.G. Edwards, used to have a saying that bull markets end when favored equities fail to rally on good news. That's what I'm watching for.
Thank you, Bill, Patrick, and Thomas. Listeners can read detailed explanations and view charts of economic data that build a case for Confluence recommendations by accessing the Confluence Investment Management webpage. That's confluenceinvestment.com. Look for links to the Confluence of Ideas report titled Implications of the New Techno-Industrial State. Geopolitical events can certainly disrupt markets, and you can gain an understanding of what to watch out for by keeping up to date on the Confluence bi-weekly geopolitical report and reading the Confluence 2026 Geopolitical Outlook, also on the Confluence webpage. Today's discussion is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice, and this information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.